Discussing another interesting topic about a very promising digital payment platform disrupting the consumer and B2B payment sector in London, widely known as WisePay. For today's podcast episode, we have invited Ian Ray, Chief Executive Officer of WisePay from UK, as he explains to us the exceptional features of the platform, as well as its significant relevance to our digital economy. So let's get started. Thank you for listening to FinCircle and welcome to our podcast. The following quoted line from Bill Gates' groundbreaking book, The Road Ahead, catches our attention and somehow a right fit to our subject matter for today. He said the following statement: "We always overestimate the change that will occur in the next 2 years and underestimate the change that will occur in the next 10. But the timeless advice that follows is even more important. Don't let yourself be lulled into inaction." That basically sums up the importance of not only staying afloat, but also swimming with the current in the river of technology that keeps flowing faster than ever. Being relevant to the market and to consumers is paramount for businesses. In today's rapidly evolving marketplace, companies and individuals alike must keep up with the new digital trends if they are to continue meeting consumer expectations. Traditional business models are being pushed to the wayside and many organizations are struggling to keep pace, or worse yet, resisting change altogether. How a company responds to these changes and trends will determine its ability to survive or even thrive. Even if it has embraced digital transformation, knowing what changes to make when to make them, and how to manage updated business processes and outcomes is a significant challenge. Like, for instance, Amazon, Uber, and Netflix are classic examples of companies that combine these elements and embody the very face of digital disruption. Both platforms capitalize on new technologies and changing consumer habits, and both have significantly impacted traditional businesses and systems in their respective industries. Their disruptive presence and rapid rise force established and entrenched companies to rethink the tried and true models. How does an average company deal then with or even bring about disruptive innovation in the industry? Here are some of the concrete steps that we have observed so far. Number one, don't change for the sake of change. While change is good more often than not, companies need to understand the need for change, especially when it comes to technology. There might be many advantages that new technology can bring to an organization, but leadership also needs to beware of the pitfalls and security, as well as regulatory concerns surrounding the change. Instead, companies should do their own due diligence and focus on how digital adoption will create value, either for the business, its customers, and stakeholders. Number two, focus on the problem, not the technology. Digital disruption and innovation are not limited to a certain technology or its use. They're all about how the business leverages technology to solve a problem or somehow meet an objective. Technology can certainly change the world, and it has already in many ways. In fact, the age of technology is now well over 3 decades old, and there are a lot of technologies themselves that have become old, creating problems and opportunities in equal measure. Businesses therefore need to find and focus on a problem to solve. They already have technologies to help solve the problem. However, many companies get so caught in the latest and greatest in tech that they forgot the goals and solutions on which their business is based from. Number three, embrace technology. While this may seem counterintuitive to the point highlighted, the stark reality is that digital disruption can only be countered, managed, and outlasted when the organization has a certain level of technological maturity. It pays to be in constant state of digital transformation, or at least digital flux. Just like a boxer who keeps jumping around the ring, adopting new technologies helps a business remain agile, allows it to change direction quicker, increases its reach, and improve its core product, so to speak. Number four, watch out for old wine in new bottles. Many times, vendors try to pass off repackage existing systems as new and improved disruptive technologies. Large companies with established brands and proven solutions are especially great at this one, where they dress up their existing products with promises of radical new features and benefits. IT organizations should differentiate the marketing speak from genuinely game-changing products to avoid unnecessary vendor lock-in, for instance. Number five, drive strategy and operation with data. Today, every business is an information business. Data is a company's greatest asset. And every company needs digital systems that enable to collect, manage, use and share data in a secure, reliable, and efficient way without increasing complexity. Number 6. Always be customer-centric. A business might start on founders' or investors' money, but it's always the customers' money that keeps it going. It is vital not to lose sight of this fact. If a disruption benefits customers, the business is duty-bound to embrace it wholeheartedly. Number 7. Go all out with radical innovation. The face of technological innovation is accelerating exponentially. As they say, if it ain't broke, don't fix it. But this is no longer a truism. Good enough falls short enough by a wide margin. And companies that are trying to make their best and most profitable product innovations obsolete are under threat from digital native thinkers who will do it anyway. Thus, most organizations that simply follow the market need to fundamentally change how they think and create value from the new circumstances created by digital disruption instead of playing along with it. Here are some key takeaways. Rewards awaits those that adapt, but bigger rewards await those that disrupt. Grab that first mover and fast mover advantage. And we also have to be cognizant of the fact that we really need to solve a problem as our objective, and making sure that we have a very good customer experience and journey. So let's take it forward and make sure that all of these things happen for a reason. Let's go for it. In today's podcast episode, we'll be talking to the brilliant mind behind WisePay, a very powerful platform disrupting the digital payment ecosystem in UK today. Together with its co-founder and its chief executive officer, Ian Ray, as he explains to us the remarkable features of WisePay, as well as its vital importance to our present digital economy. It's great to have you again, Ian, and welcome back to FinCircle.
Thanks for having me on again, Edgar. It's an honor and privilege to catch up.
Let's probably start by laying out the value proposition of WisePay in our cashless society and the virtual economy as a whole.
Yeah, the original inspiration behind WisePay was about changing the way that businesses and customers interact and disintermediating the current methods by which people pay for goods and services. But also, we want to benefit the business in terms of customer acquisition, retention, marketing, and primary cash flow. The last point was the main initial inspiration. A lot of us, the founders, myself and the founders, come from banking, and we sort of took on a challenge of allowing businesses to raise capital and get funding from their customers in a cooperative and collaborative way, as opposed to traditional methods through banks. What Starbucks did back in 2018, they moved from a paper-based loyalty platform to an app-based prepayment process, and it showed the sort of that this was possible and the huge benefits. I mean, it's widely thought now that Starbucks is actually a bank with coffee outlets with around $200 million a month coming in from prepayments. So we think at WisePay that an alternative prepayment method that uses that closed loop can deliver benefits to both businesses and customers. So yeah, in general, the move to cashless society was accelerated through the pandemic, and yeah, I think the consumers' subsequent sort of openness to digital transactions has driven this appetite for change that we're trying to take advantage with WisePay.
We're very much aware that when there is digital payments, there will always be strict compliance on all the legal regulations. The underlying question is, where are we at this stage and which direction are we going?
Yeah, I think that the complete global financial system's is digital and has been for decades, the sort of wholesale side of financial markets. I think in consumer space, again, as I mentioned earlier, it's been accelerated by COVID primarily, and it's predominantly digital in the sort of most of the so-called developed nations, I guess, to an extent where I think it's actually sort of there's a danger that we're going to exclude people, disadvantaged and vulnerable people, which we have to consider and act on. In terms of regulation, payments is highly regulated, and rightly so. I think privacy, security legislation, regulation is increasing and totally appropriate as we use these platforms more, as they get more sophisticated. Then I think the legislation regulation needs to keep in step with that. I think there's probably just a side sort of thing. There is a sort of schizophrenia or confusion about crypto, which is grabbing headlines, but a lot of those scandals are not actually related to technology. I mean, the technology is very robust and very secure. It seems to be old-fashioned scams and frauds dressed up in new tech clothing. I think we need to be careful not to stifle innovation through new technology because of some bad actors who would have done this anyway, irrespective of the tech.
Based on the recent survey by PwC, the risk of fraud is one of the prime reasons why most customers may avoid adopting mobile wallets, particularly in 2023. According to the survey, mobile payments and digital wallets appear like a huge unknown risk of hacking, data theft, vulnerabilities, and malware. What do you think are being done to address these underlying circumstances?
I think it's actually becoming less of an issue as sort of alternative payment methods, of which WisePay is one, become more prevalent and used more. So, yeah, I think digital wallets are increasingly used, and you've got other payment methods like Klarna with Buy Now, Pay Later, and things like that. So, Apple Pay, Google Pay, Alipay, and WeChat Pay, successfully process billions of transactions safely and securely on a daily basis through wallet-based solutions. So whilst I think the issues you mentioned are concerning, right, the previously mentioned legislative and regulatory demands, allied with the sort of resources of big tech, seem to be turning the tide and people become more comfortable and more familiar. I think, if I recall, with contactless payments, card payments, a similar reluctance for people to use contactless, but now it's ubiquitous, right? Everyone does it. No one even thinks twice when they're tapping their card, to make payments. Probably should do. They should check what's happening. But it is widely used, and it's about habits, right? It's about consumer habits, which need to be allied again with that legislation, regulation, and robust technology. I think we'll turn the tide, and the use of wallets will become the way forward.
WisePay have several interesting and unique service offerings, Ian, particularly this pay now, buy later option. Perhaps you can tell us more about it and what should the consumers expect from it?
Yeah, it's a bit strange, actually. It's a bit counterintuitive for a lot of people, is pay now, buy later. But if you look at it, sort of buy now, pay later has been enormously successful, right? Yeah, globally, with some really big players emerging like Klarna and others, right? So I think in a low interest rate environment with increasingly challenging cost of living, you can see it's clear why that need is there. But obviously, with interest rate environment changing, we yet to see what really happens, and some of the valuations of those companies are obviously suffering somewhat. So the way we look at it, we think there are three categories of money. There's buy now, pay now. It's what we do. It's what you walk into shop, you just buy now and pay now. So sort of cash-based transactions. There's the buy now, pay later, as we described. And I say we come up with pay now, buy later, which we think is about smart, responsible budgeting and spending that benefits everyone. So give you an example. If I know I'm spending $50 a week in a coffee, why wouldn't I prepay $40 to get the same amount of value, assuming it's a 20% discount from the coffee shop? So I was going to spend it anyway. The business had the money up front to pay their staff or buy equipment or anything they need to do, and they've got one very loyal and incentivized customer with me, right? So because having spent the money up front, I'm going to go back to that coffee shop and buy my coffee. So I think it's not for everyone. So paying now and buying late isn't for everyone. Someone described it as the lazy, rich, and indolent will probably unlikely to care. And I think people under severe financial pressure are unlikely to have the spare funds to prepay. But I think, vast majority of people would be capable of transacting this way for their habitual spending. We think this sort of closed loop approach, works really well in that sort of habitual usage, low transaction volume, but value, sorry, transactions. And we're seeing more movement in this space. We just think that the sort of whole prepayment, loyalty, gift card, voucher type experience is ripe for disruption. And WisePay is that alternative payment method that's going to disrupt all of that.
Very good point, Ian. We all know that the General Data Protection Regulation, or GDPR, applies to all companies based in the European Union and those with EU citizens as customers. Given the Brexit developments, what are its impact to all the digital payment and mobile wallet service providers, both in UK and EU, with regards to regulatory compliance is concerned?
I think, to be completely honest, well, you know, Brexit's been fairly disastrous in general from the UK, in my opinion. At a practical level, it hasn't made a huge difference. I mean, you know, having lived and worked in financial services in Singapore for many years, yeah, I'm used to and completely support the regulatory robustness that the Monetary Authority of Singapore dictate and feel it's entirely appropriate. So whether it's the EU or it's the Financial Conduct Authority in the UK, it shouldn't matter, right? So I think whereas privacy, security are just general good practice in terms of operational resilience, I think that these are hygiene factors for any digital payment or wallet provider. You know, I'm a customer too, and I want my privacy to be taken care of, and I want it to be secure, and I want my money to be the main priority of any service I consume. You know, so therefore, wherever I'm operating, you know, it doesn't matter who the regulator is. You know, it's just hygiene factors you need to design into your platform right from the start.
The Boston Consulting Group carried out a research recently that states that almost 43% of the mobile users have trust issues with all the three types of e-wallets, particularly the closed, semi-closed, and open. And 38% are afraid that if the phone gets lost, they will not be able to make a payment, or someone might steal their money as well as their digital information. A survey by McKinsey, on the other hand, found that consumers are still reluctant to recommend the mobile wallet they are using to their friends and family. This may not be the case for everyone, but how do you think we can further influence consumers to change this market impression?
Yeah, I think, as I said earlier, I think, yeah, the use of phone-based wallets has increased, you know, and I think that sort of ubiquitous usage, the more people use it, along with the robust regulation legislation, will tend to breed trust, right? So I think any wallet solution, any payment solution, needs to be designed from the outset to gain trust. That's got to be its purpose, right? So, you know, strong encrypted authentication is a must, right? It's just a given. You need that, right? As well as design that doesn't need much personal data, which can be exploited. I mean, what's the point of keeping lots of personal data if you don't need it, right? So there is always a trade-off, right, between, and we see this all the time, the trade-off between sort of robust security and the friction in the customer experience, you know. So we all use multiple banking apps and government gateways and all sorts of stuff. So people are used to sort of pretty robust protection, where it's biometrics, multi-factor authentication, and increasingly private keys, right? So they all need to be a prerequisite. They're just a given. You know, it's a bit like you keep your own physical wallet. You try to keep it safe. You don't just sort of leave it laying around. You look after it. It's the same. We need to enable consumers to take care of their wallets with the right tools. So we use a fully encrypted, decentralized private key solution, right? You know, and it's designed for total security, because that's what we need, right? We need to build that trust so people habitually use the platform to get their benefit, and also benefit our customers who are the retailers.
I understand, Ian, that your group is in the process of establishing more retailers for WisePay. How is it so far, and what are the developments at this point in time?
Yeah, it's been a great summer. Although the weather wasn't great in London, but it was we had a very successful period, and we onboarded some really amazing businesses in the Canary Wharf business district in London, and we're really firmly established as part of the community there, and. Yeah, and that's important, actually. We are sort of pushing a community-based sort of proposition, right? We want to be part of the community. We're based at the sort of hugely successful Level 39 incubator in Canary Wharf as well, which helps us be part of the community as well. And that's a great place to work. You know, they're very supportive of us. We've had a number of sort of charity events as well, which have which have sort of helped the community and helped us, which has been great. So we've still got more to do. I mean, there's 350 retailers. We've got 20 so far. There's 150,000 employees. We've got 2,000, and there's expanding residential population as well of 8,000 people, which we're just sort of reaching into that. So our go-to-market strategy is about communities, right? So, yeah, we want to launch in communities, help those communities, help the business and the people in them, and we'll be targeting other geographies as we sort of progress, as well as doing partnerships with similar sort of organizations, right, which can help us to scale. Currently, what we do is it's a sort of non-fungible sort of solution. So you buy coins, and prepay with certain retailers. In our roadmap, we've got a method by which we do a more fungible sort of offering where you can do a community coin across a whole geography, right? So, and then you can start doing other things, sort of, invest in the community and so on. So we're pretty excited about that, and we'll be getting into that next year. That really does open up a whole new sort of a market segment for us.
It's a great progress indeed. Anyway, we're very much impressed with the WiseSpace proof of concept, or POC, particularly in relation to the issuance of company-specific digital currency and the three-tiered architecture centered on the elements of blockchain. What do you think are the significant gains of this framework for the respective stakeholders?
Yeah, we designed this infrastructure for the long term. We didn't sort of choose blockchain because we wanted to sort of keep up with the cool kids or anything. It was just, we just felt it was the right solution. So I think, the benefits of the digital currency will come clear as we start to offer more features such as the fungible coin I spoke about earlier. I think also more adoption will come other features which are on our roadmap, which are more subscription type services. So businesses could offer subscription. It's a very increasing popular method for businesses to operate and to secure customers, retain them and get revenue. So we think that's a way forward for us. We would hope that we sort of enter in sort of more enterprise corporations and we can deliver an API type solution, whereas they can use the infrastructure we have for their offerings. And we also think the WisePay as a payment method could be embedded into other wallets or apps as well, right? So all these use cases are a pathway to original vision of providing funding and capital to businesses, and we could possibly sort of start to collate all that information, data, and potentially money to do some sort of peer-to-peer lending type stuff, right? So it really does open up lots of possibilities, right? So and it's really, it's a few years off some of these things, but the underlying blockchain, the wallet API infrastructure built allows all these things to happen.
From your perspective, Ian, how do you foresee the digital payments in the future, and what should be our realistic expectation on this regard?
As I mentioned earlier, I think that it's definitely here to stay, is increasing sort of on a daily basis. I think it continues to evolve. And I think it will diversify, particularly I think as crypto becomes more, let's say, acceptable and less scams in it and becomes a sort of mainstream methodology of paying. I mean, Bitcoin, is probably the favorite which will do that. I mean, I remember in Singapore seeing a Bitcoin ATM many years ago. It was a bit of a sort of novelty. It's become with the sort of financial markets being as they are, Bitcoin is obviously a sort of increasingly attractive place to well, an attractive instrument to do trade with, right? So I think as long as we marginalize the bad actors with strong regulation legislation I mentioned earlier, I think probably the biggest risk is one I touched on earlier, which is social exclusion. We can't leave disadvantaged and vulnerable people behind, like the elderly. My parents are getting quite old, and for them to interact with a mobile banking app and all this stuff is very difficult, right? So, and I end up doing it all. We really shouldn't leave anyone behind.
Very well said. Are there any initiatives that you're working with, as well as your plan for WisePay in 2024 and beyond, that you would like to share with our podcast listening audience? Most importantly, what are the easiest way of reaching out or contacting you?
Yeah, I think I covered most of them earlier on. I think, if anyone, any of listeners are in London, look out for us, right? If you're in London, look up Wisepay, see if you can find a retailers and try it out and let us know what you think. So, yeah, these are exciting times in the industry and for Wisepay, for me personally, right? So, I've had a long and interesting career, but I can say that the building Wisepay is the standout so far, right? It's a very different experience. In a startup than it's been in the corporate world that I lived in before. But it's when it's great, it's very good. When it's tough, it's quite tough as well. But overall, it's an amazing experience. And we're building something very special here, right? And I'd love everyone to try it out at some point, but probably come to London first. Eventually, we'll get in the rest of the world, but that will take a little bit of time. So, in terms of getting hold of me, please follow us on LinkedIn, Instagram, Twitter. Or follow us on our website, and it's Wisepay, Wyzepay. So just make sure you spell it right, because otherwise you end up on a home security cameras or something like that. So you should spot the right one.
Well, thanks so much, Ian, for your valuable insights on this mobile payments and wallets, as well as the remarkable features of Wisepay and its significant benefits to our digital economy. Wish you all the best and great success in the future.
Thank you, Edgar.
Sincere appreciation to Ian Ray on sharing us the remarkable features of Wisepay and its vital importance to our digital economy. We would like to hear from you. Share us your thoughts regarding our topics and send us a message on the Anchor Voice message box. Your message could end up on our future podcast episode. Make sure you never miss any episodes of FinCircle by clicking the subscribe button or follow us on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Breaker, Google Podcasts, Radio Public, Amazon Music, Pocket Casts, Audible, Overcast, TuneIn, Stitcher, Anchor.fm, and affiliated podcast platforms. You can also reach us on our website at fincircle.wordpress.com and our Facebook page at FinCircle Podcast. This concludes our podcast episode today. Thank you for listening on FinCircle. This is Ed Angelus. Let's catch up again soon.